originally the entire stablecoin market was offshore, and now the US is trying to play catch up. And I worry that the exact same thing is going to happen with tokenized securities, because the market structure and the market standard is already permissionless tokens.
Get ready to jumpstart your week with the FCAT Crypto Brief, brought to you by the Fidelity Center for Applied Technology. Join us as we delve into the hottest topics, from blockchain breakthroughs to DeFi revolutions and market happenings. We promise to go deeper than the headlines and deliver market insights you can't get just anywhere. Be sure to hit subscribe for your bi-weekly dose of crypto commentary. Quick disclaimer, we're here for education, not investment advice. Views expressed are of the hosts, not Fidelity or its affiliates. Crypto is a wild space, highly volatile, can become illiquid anytime, and is strictly for those with a high risk tolerance. Buckle up, enjoy the ride, and let's dive into what's been happening recently.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of the FCAT Crypto Brief. I'm Matt Allen, and this week I'm joined by David Shapiro, new host Catherine Wichker, and very special guest from Ondo Finance, Ian DeBode. We have a very exciting episode for you coming out today talking about tokenization. But I think before we get started, Catherine, it would be great if you could just introduce yourself to our audience.
Absolutely. So my name is Catherine. I'm an attorney in Fidelity's legal department. And now, of course, the required disclaimer, the views I express are my own, not Fidelity's. And nothing here is legal advice. It's just insight from a crypto lawyer who finds the intersection of crypto and tech far more exciting than one normally should.
Well, Catherine, thank you for joining us. We're very excited to have you on this episode and going forward. But for today specifically, Ian, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Oh, the pleasure is all ours. If you'd be so kind, could you just introduce yourself and a bit of your background and then maybe what you do at Ondo?
Yeah, of course. So it's good to be here, everyone. My name's Ian. I'm the president and acting CEO of Ondo Finance. Joined Ondo about 2.5 years ago. Before that, I was a partner at McKinsey & Company. I spent almost 9 years there. Ended up managing all their efforts in crypto and digital assets in North America. So as part of that, was working with a lot of the traditional financial incumbents and helping them understand what are digital assets, what are they not, what can you do with them, what can you not do with them. But at some point, you know, you get a little bit tired of advising the TradFis on what to do, and you're just like, I'm going to go build it myself. So ta-da, Ondo Finance. Ondo, for those of you who don't know, we are the leader in tokenization. Tokenization is the process where you issue a token that represents what we call a real world asset. So think of a treasury, stock, ETF, sometimes also cash, right? A stable coin is really just tokenized cash. We do that same process, but instead for cash, we do it for treasury, stocks, and ETFs. So we are the largest issuer of those asset classes. We've got about $4 billion in total value locked. We've got about, call it 500 different assets that we issue. We are live on 10 different blockchains, integrated in over 200 different DeFi protocols. And we also develop application and services on top of these assets that we offer to our clients. So the most recent example of that, for example, is Ondo Perps. It's a perpetual futures platform where we provide people with the ability to actually enter into a derivative position on an actual stock, but also use stock collateral in order to do that. So that's just one example of the things we do. But by and large, think of Ondo as the company that tokenizes anything but cash that is public in the liquid markets.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot to cover there. I think we're going to dive into all those different pieces over the next 30 minutes. But from a high level perspective, could you also talk about maybe the core market and user base that Ondo serves? Like, what is your target market, target customer? Where do you operate and where do you not?
Yes, great question. And I think it kind of boils down a little bit to like, why are we tokenizing and what are we tokenizing? Right. So Ondo, as mentioned, we focus on treasury stocks and ETFs. These are all assets that are already available in public markets with very deep liquidity and price discovery. Because we fundamentally believe, why do you tokenize in the first place? You do it because people actually want access to that asset, but historically they've struggled to get it, but they want to buy it, right? There's established demand. They want to buy it, but they've struggled because of gatekeeping, because of high fees, because of local rules and jurisdictions, who knows, right? But just like a stable coin, is a very easy way now to get access to the US dollar. You can apply that same logic to US capital markets more broadly. So that brings you to treasury stocks and ETFs. The other reason as to why you tokenize is because there's this entire ecosystem that lives on chain, on the internet right now, of financial services that can operate 24/7, right? This is DeFi. These are smart contracts that are pre-programmed to do certain things like margin lending. If you provide collateral into that software program, you can borrow up to a certain amount. Everything happens programmatically. Everything happens 24/7. But that ecosystem essentially needs assets. That ecosystem needs collateral. So you tokenize something to actually enable it as collateral on chain. But again, that leads you to treasury stocks and ETFs because there's very large and established markets to do repo, to do margin lending and the like. It's much harder to do these types of things when you're tokenizing real estate or even private credit, right? Those are some of the other things that get thrown around. But they actually don't really lend themselves that easily to on-chain price discovery and on-chain collateral. The most straightforward thing to do where there's established demand, easy price discovery, people know what it is they're getting, and then the ability to use that on-chain as collateral is stocks, ETFs, and treasuries. So that's why we tokenize these things. Our clients are primarily offshore. So there's different ways to tokenize these assets, and happy to talk a little bit more about that. We fundamentally believe that the way to tokenize is by issuing permissionless tokens that represent economic exposure to the underlying. Again, that is very similar to a stablecoin, right? If you think about what a stablecoin is, it's just a permissionless wrapper over cash or treasuries that sit in a bank account or at a custodian. We apply that very same concept to stocks and ETFs. So we issue permissionless tokens that you can freely transfer between on-chain wallets and using DeFi and whatever you want to do, where the underlying that is backing these tokens are stocks, ETFs, and treasuries. We really believe in more open, inclusive financial access globally. So primarily our clients are offshore investors. Our tokens are also only available to offshore investors because they are permissionless. And so we see a lot of demand among retail, high net worth individuals, some institutions, all offshore, that basically want to get access to US capital markets and then start using it as collateral for capital efficiency on things like perks platforms.
So you guys have tokenized a number of stocks and US companies. What specific names have you seen the most demand for globally? And what is driving the demand into those names?
Yeah, great question, because I think it's going to be one of those classic, oh, it's crypto. You very clearly see there's two types of segments in terms of how they invest that want access to our products. You literally have the buy and hold guys that just want to buy some fixed income ETFs. There's actually quite a lot of demand on chain for fixed income, for earn programs in particular. Lots of stablecoin capital that is just looking to very easily access something that is still, you know, downside protected, but pays them a better yield. So we see quite a bit of fixed income products buy and hold. But then at the same time, honestly, the majority of the demand is in rather speculative / volatile assets that people on chain can easily understand. I think there's even like trade groups that say, oh my God, it's going to be the next Nvidia. I always learn about these things and I'm kind of surprised that is the analogy that is being made. So that was the scale that we're already looking at. But you then also see it at the, you know, semiconductors, the memory stocks that are very popular, things that are very topical. People basically want to buy and sometimes speculate on.
So you mentioned two main ways to kind of think about holding them, right? You mentioned the one, which is the buy and holds, right? We'll set that to the side. But the other two main ways were they want to hold because they want to invest and have access to an asset that they can't normally get access to offshore. And then the second reason is because they want to use it as collateral. Could you dive a little bit more into the collateral use case and where you see that going?
Yeah, no, I think it's a great question. And I promise I'll get to that. But really quick on the access bit, because sometimes people, I've noticed, they're like, well, what about access? I mean, globally, people can set up a whatever account, right? So why don't they just do that? I mean, when we talk about access and what people really want, A, there are really jurisdictions where it is legitimately hard to get access to U.S. capital markets because of capital controls or the fees. Or I think in Argentina in particular, for example, the only thing that you can really buy are these products that are issued by banks. And sometimes they charge 5% fee on an initial purchase. Like, that's what you're dealing with, right? So then if all of a sudden someone can just have stable coins and buy these stocks and ETFs where the fee is 5 bips at Ondo, that is a very big difference. You also have crypto exchanges and crypto wallets. All these guys, they want to offer stocks, right? Everyone wants to be the everything app. For these crypto exchanges, it is significantly easier to offer stocks in tokenized form than it is to offer stocks in normal form. Because that way, they can do the settlement of these things 24/7, keep the markets open with pre-funded inventory on the exchange, and do the settlement in stablecoins. Their existing custody infrastructure works. Their existing accounting system works because it's just, you know, crypto tokens that they're listing. So for a lot of these distribution platforms that already exist offshore, tokenized stocks are incredibly easy for them to list and expand access to their own user base. On the piece around collateral, I think that one is where we're starting to see more and more traction too, because there's this incredible ecosystem that already exists with DeFi that can operate 24/7, right? People think of, you know, Aave and margin lending and the like, but increasingly there's examples too, like Hyperliquid, right? Perpetual futures, where people can express an opinion on an asset 24/7. The perps markets, it's a perpetual future for those on the line that don't really know. A perpetual future, think of it as like a normal future, but there's no rollover, there's no expiry. It's a very simple, easy to use product where you can go long with leverage after you post collateral. I'll get back to that in just a second. And you can express that opinion 24/7, right? You go long, someone on the other side goes short, and the longs typically pay the shorts depending on where the demand is. But overall, people like going long more because the return profile is a little bit different and the risk profile is a little different. So the longs pay the shorts. That's a perpetual future. It's very popular among crypto natives. It started on crypto, but increasingly it's also being rolled out to stocks, ETFs, commodities, and the like. In fact, during the Iran crisis, the volumes on Hyperliquid on oil were becoming so large that there was real price signal in these commodity markets. And increasingly, the same thing is even happening on pre-IPO stocks, futures on these perpetual futures, and even normal stocks, right? If you look at the price trajectory on perpetual futures on chain over the weekend and how the price evolves, and then you compare that to the Sunday open on stuff like Blue Ocean, that gap is shortening over time. So the price signals are becoming better and better and better because volumes are increasingly becoming better. Now, the main problem right now with these perpetual futures platforms, though, is that they're pretty capital inefficient. So what ends up happening is a trader comes in, they deposit stable coins as collateral. It's the main collateral that a user can hold. And they say, well, let's say they want to go 10x long Tesla. So a retail user comes in, deposits stable coin, 10x long Tesla. For every long, there's a short. So a market maker has to come in, deposit stablecoin as collateral, short Tesla. No market maker wants to be short Tesla. They want to be hedged. So they have their Interactive Brokers account or their Fidelity account or their Prime account where they buy Tesla. And now they're hedged. But they're not hedged in the eyes of the platform. So they need to have more stablecoins available in case the market moves against them, because otherwise they would get liquidated on that platform, even though they're hedged. So they end up with capital for collateral, capital to hedge, and then capital, more capital to hedge because the hedge is ineffective on the platform. In an ideal world, what would happen is retail users go long Tesla, market maker comes in, short Tesla, deposit Tesla as collateral, fully hedged in the eyes of the platform, and you can collect the funding of the long. So it enables a carry trade on stocks, and it makes the entire ecosystem significantly more capital efficient, which then in turn leads to better liquidity, leads to better price discovery, which really completes this cycle of 24/7 trading and market pricing. So that is the key innovation that we rolled out with Ondo Perps. You can already use, I believe, 15 different stocks and ETFs and commodities as collateral on our platform. And we're basically rolling this out to the full 100 markets that are listed. But that's a key example of why you need a tokenized stock, because you can't do this stuff on the CFB or on the NASDAQ. Like, it's not going to work, right? So that is why you need a tokenized stock. And you need it in permissionless form because you want to be able to use it as collateral on these DeFi platforms. Otherwise, there's no point.
I love that in particular because it's solving probably, from a TradFi perspective, a very niche issue, right? Of portfolio margining. I have securities, I have commodities. I want to use my margin efficiently across both groups. This solves that problem by bringing the security as a token onto the commodity platform.
100%. If you want to move towards proper 24/7 portfolio margin, and not just for hedge funds, but essentially for everyone, this is the way you do it.
So let's talk about Ondo Chain a little bit. So your perps product runs on Ondo Chain, is that correct?
Yes, although we rebranded it technically to say the Ondo Network, because what do you need a blockchain really for, right? When we were designing Ondo perps, we took a hard look at what does on-chain infrastructure really allow you to do and what is it good for, right? Blockchains, I think, are extraordinarily good at having a transparent state, at enabling permissionless access, at doing instant settlement or more or less instant settlement, and enabling self-custody of your assets, right? As basically what that means is the intermediation of counterparties. You can always be in control of your own assets and move them around platforms very efficiently so you can always get the best price. That's really what a blockchain does. What a blockchain does not do well is very fast execution or enable privacy. They really suck at that. And so when we looked at, okay, we're going to be designing this perpetual futures platform, you need very fast execution on a platform like that, because otherwise everyone and their mother who trades on that platform is going to get picked off because your TradFi prices have a certain latency. This exchange needs to have a certain latency. How do you match them up? On top of that, if you do all of your execution on chain, you basically lose the ability for any type of privacy, which according to some has benefits, like Hyperliquid doesn't have privacy, and that seems to be totally fine for some, but it's not fine for everyone. Right. So we ended up changing the design of the Ondo chain to be less like a full public blockchain and move the execution of transactions all off chain, but still have the code that executes the matching engine and the like be distributed among multiple parties. So we as the operator cannot unilaterally just change the code and decide to, you know, rip off people or change the ordering priority or move the funds somewhere. Like none of that is possible because this code is hosted in multiple different instances to increase the accountability and transparency, just like a blockchain does it. But the actual execution can happen in what we call a secure enclave, but off chain. So that is very fast and you can have privacy. So that's what we call the Ondo Network. It's like this ability to have the code distributed among multiple attesters, but still have then off-chain execution privacy while keeping a lot of the end states periodically settled on-chain. So you can have transparency on what the real state is, and it remains self-custodial. You can move your funds freely in and out and freely accessible.
Yeah, that's. I think it makes a lot of really interesting trade-offs compared to what's out there today, and it sort of positions it in a very unique place. So I'm like very interested to see how things play out.
Totally. And I mean, the first use case we built on it is perps, but you can build a bunch of other things on Jair where you want fast execution and privacy, yet still have, you know, open accessibility and transparency and composability on the state. So we do think it has the potential of being a little bit of a new primitive, but we'll see where it goes.
And so this will be like fully permissionless, or like anyone will be able to create a wallet and hold assets. And awesome.
100%.
I think that's a really interesting innovation, because basically solving a problem that people have, I think, kind of levered at blockchains for a long time, which is that like in traditional markets, we have lit and dark venues. And some traders need to have access to dark venues. You don't want alpha decay or alpha leakage. And this is a way to solve that problem while still creating permissionless blockchain. So I think that's really interesting.
100%. And if you are like one of these key influencers, big traders that does retail and really wants their positions to be public so other people can copy trade and create influence that way, right? You can send us a note and we will turn that on for you. So it's really, it's privacy by default. But if you don't want it, we can turn it off and all of your transactions and states and whatever can be shared with everyone.
That's awesome. we've talked a lot about like public P&L on the show and like how there are some merits of it. And it's probably been a big driver of Hyperliquid's popularity. But at the same exact time, it's like very inappropriate for a lot of other users. So it's been interesting to see which sort of user base different platforms try to court because they are almost completely at odds with each other.
I think that's right. So we'll see where this goes. But yes, we tried to actively make that trade-off and just have it on demand, right? If you want your positions to be public, you can request that. If not, everything is private by default.
I think that's awesome. And now I wanted to kind of go back to something that you touched on earlier in the conversation. A lot of Ondo's user base is offshore. I'm curious what the regulatory environment looks like in the US for tokenized products such as Ondo versus XUS and kind of your views on that marketplace.
Yeah, that's such a good question. And it's probably helpful to just paint a little bit of a picture of what are the different models that even exist in the first place, right? Because there's so much debate on what is the right way to tokenize. So there's, by and large, there's three models that if you want to place any type of traditional financial asset on chain, you can follow three different approaches where the third approach has like two different sub-flavors. So I'll happily talk about that. The first thing that people are doing right now, particularly in the US context, is the DTCC approach, right? At the actual CSD, you have a tokenization engine. If people are trading on the NASDAQ or the New York Stock Exchange, they're going to have the ability to accept their settlement in the asset in normal form or in tokenized form. And if they choose to get it in tokenized form, the benefit of that is that it's going to live on, you can basically select the blockchain that you want it on. Once it's on that blockchain in tokenized form, over time, you're going to be able to move that asset around 24/7. So it's much easier to then do settlement in off hours and the like. But that is really the approach where it's the actual CSD that is tokenizing it. And that is quite helpful from a market infrastructure perspective, right? We as Ondo are also limited member now of the DTCC and are participating in this tokenization pilot because we see that as a very helpful infrastructure upgrade, even for us, that when we are backing our tokens with actual stocks, we can choose to have them in tokenized form and it makes it easier then afterwards to do some settlement, OTC trades or whatever you want. So DTCC approach, number one. Number two is the transfer agent approach, where a transfer agent can come in, work with a public company or anything of the sort and say, hey, let me issue your stocks on chain. Most public companies will obviously have normal stocks. They already do. Like when you go live on the NASDAQ or the New York Stock Exchange or any of the other NMS exchanges, you're going to have normal stocks. But you can then also work with a transfer agent that says, hey, I want to put my stocks on chain. That way, people with a wallet can come in and buy your stock and the token that they hold in their wallet will be the actual stock with all the rights associated with that. The downside of this model is that you need the public company to actually come to the transfer agent and say, yes, please put my stock on chain. So far, there's only been six or seven who have done that, right? It's like Galaxy and Figure and Securitize and Forward, the Solana DAT. Like, it's all crypto companies, essentially, that are like, oh, this is cool, and let me put it on chain. But you can't really buy that many public companies as a result. So you're dealing with, adverse selection bias, maybe a little bit. And then on top of that, you actually have to onboard with the transfer agent, go through the standard KYC processes, and then you can buy the stock, put it in your wallet. But the token you get is a permissioned token, meaning that you cannot freely send it to anyone else on chain, except if they are also onboarded with that transfer agent. As a result, you can't use these things in DeFi. Right? You can't just send them out of your wallet and use them as collateral on a perps exchange. That's not how that works. So what you end up with a little bit is like a normal brokerage account that you have to KYC to get, but you can only buy six stocks in it if you're lucky, and it's unclear what you then do with them. So from our perspective, it's a little bit unclear what that gets you. Now, down the line, I'm sure there's benefits maybe with regards to securities lending and the like, right? I don't want to discard that model. In fact, we have a transfer agent ourselves, so we can do this model. We just haven't done it because we don't see the immediate demand and use cases for it. The third model that exists is called the custodial model, where you issue tokens that are then backed by actual stocks, ETFs, and the like, either at a DTCC account or at a normal clearing and executing broker, right? So they call that the custodial model. It's very similar to a stablecoin. You issue a token that represents a dollar, but that dollar is actually being held at a bank or a custodian, right? There's two different flavors of this. One is called the entitlement token model, where what you issue legally is more or less the same thing as the actual stock. This token, though, in a US context, can only be held by fully KYC'd wallets. But the benefit of this third-party custodial model is that you can do it on any public stock out there, right? So you don't need the permission of the public company. So with that in mind, it can be quite helpful. Then what you're recreating is basically a full brokerage account with any stock or ETF that you want to buy, but it is still permission. But at least you can move these things around 24/7 between allowlisted participants. So there's some value in that. The other version to do this custodial model is with tokenized notes. So what you then issue, the token does not represent, it's not the same thing as the actual stock. What it represents is a debt product, a tokenized note, against the issuer, that is typically an offshore SPV. This SPV holds all the collateral that is backing these tokens, but the token you issue is a different legal instrument. It is not the same thing as a stock. As a token holder, you can get a security interest in the collateral that is perfected by a third-party collateral agent that has access to the brokerage accounts and can see that everything is fully reserved. And if the reserves ever fall below a certain level, or if the issuer ever fails to meet a redemption, this collateral agent can seize the underlying, liquidate it, and repay the token holders as needed, which essentially are the debt holders of the SPV. But what you're holding is a different legal instrument. And the benefit of doing something like that is that you can structure it like a permissionless token, just like a stablecoin. That way, you can freely transfer it globally to KYC'd and non-KYC'd wallets, which also means that you can use it in DeFi for these collateral purposes, as we mentioned before. Now, when you then look at all the different models that are articulated and where the actual market demand is, 95% of all tokenized stocks out there right now are in this tokenized note SPV offshore model, because it is the most stablecoin-like. People understand what the form factor is. They can actually use it as collateral, and it just works in an on-chain environment. All these other models that we mentioned right now have more or less zero adoption because the use case and the benefits of actually doing it in the first place are quite limited, mostly because none of these other models work with DeFi. So then how does that compare to the onshore US model and the debate? There's an approved prospectus in the European Union. You can offer these things, like a broker dealer that is MiFID registered can offer these things to EU retail in the EU, no problem, right? It has a local registration. As long as then there's a local broker dealer that can do it, it's totally fine. They also have a local registration in Abu Dhabi, so in the Middle East, because it is a totally normal form factor there that has already been approved. You can do the same thing in Singapore and some other jurisdictions. So this whole tokenized note construct increasingly is becoming the default offshore with plenty of approved registrations of the product. It is just not allowed in a US context because the US frameworks have not really wrapped their head around how to have a permissionless security token. And so when you see all this debate happening in the US and the SEC innovations exemptions and the like, I am very much in favor for an innovation exemption and having proper rules on how to do any of this, right? But my worry when I see some of that discourse is that people tend to think that they're designing it in a little bubble and in isolation, whereas that's just not the case. The US is trying to compete on a global scale on where the home of tokenized capital markets will be. And if the US does not find a way to enable permissionless tokens on securities, ultimately, they will lose. This is what happened in stablecoins. This entire market was offshore. They finally got their act together and Congress rammed it through. But ultimately, originally, the entire stablecoin market was offshore and now the US is trying to play catch up. And I worry that the exact same thing is going to happen with tokenized securities because the market structure and the market standard is already permissionless tokens. So either you decide to embrace that or not, that ultimately determines where the home of capital markets will be, on chain at least.
Would Clarity Act do anything for permissionless tokens in the US?
No, absolutely nothing.
You know, this sort of reminds me of when fractionalized shares sort of became available to U.S. retail and brought on a bunch of latent demand into these equity names. And so what Ondo is doing with exporting these globally, I think is also really interesting, because we also get to see how much latent demand there is out there to be in these names. And then it'll also be exciting to see what gets built on top of these things, right? So like bringing these tokens on chain in a permissionless way just creates an enormous amount of room for experimentation and chaining things together to build even better products. And so it feels like it's only a matter of time before Wall Street is wrapping these on-chain strategies using the tokenized assets and offering them in the brokerage accounts.
100%. And it's only, I mean, there's lots of people already working on this type of stuff, because now we're entering a very unique moment in time where you've got stocks, ETFs, commodities, crypto, prediction markets, they're all living on the same rails, right? So, and they're all issued as programmable tokens that you can set specific restrictions on. So Ondo, we are very soon going to roll out something called Ondo Intelligent Portfolios, which essentially allows us or other asset managers to come in and say, hey, I want to create some sort of model portfolio, right? Of all different things that you put together, set the rules of how this model portfolio is supposed to behave. We can put that all together, and then people can buy a single token that basically represents this model portfolio in tokenized form, and it can programmatically rebalance however you want to do it, right? So it's, I don't want to say it's just like an ETF, because I know the lawyers on the call will kill me for, you know, saying that. And it's not exactly the same thing as an ETF, but there are very clear parallels between that type of product and what an ETF originally did, because it really enabled very easy passive investing, right? So that people didn't have to combine different things into a portfolio. The exact same thing will now get to happen with these tokenized model portfolios across asset classes, and really open up what historically I think has been more wealth management, but opening it up to global retail. And the types of strategies that people are going to be able to tokenize, I think, can blow people's mind. It's not just about like an ETF type construct where you put stuff in and it's a buy and hold. You can even tokenize like a carry trade on stocks and the like. There's so many different things that you could do.
It goes to a distribution channel strategies that were not available to traditional retail investors.
100%.
Well, Ian, I want to be respectful of your time. We covered a lot here. Ondo is doing a lot of work in the tokenization space. I think this has been super helpful for our listeners. But David, Catherine, Ian, thank you so much for your time. This is a great conversation.
Really appreciate it. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you.
Crypto as an asset class is highly volatile, can become illiquid at any time, and is for investors with a high risk tolerance. Crypto may also be more susceptible to market manipulation than securities. Crypto is not insured by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation or the Securities Investor Protection Corporation. Investors in crypto do not benefit from the same regulatory protections applicable to registered securities. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. This podcast was produced by the Fidelity Center for Applied Technology, also known as FCAT. FCAT does not offer digital assets nor provide clearing or custody of such assets. It is for informational purposes only and is not intended to provide tax, legal, insurance, or investment advice, and should not be construed as an offer to sell, a solicitation of an offer to buy, or a recommendation for any security or other asset by any Fidelity entity or third party. Views expressed are as of the date indicated, based on the information available at the time, and may change based on market or other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of the authors and not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. Fidelity and any other third parties mentioned in the podcast are independent entities and are not affiliated. Mentioning them does not suggest a recommendation or endorsement by Fidelity. This information is not intended for distribution to or use by any person or entity in any jurisdiction or country where such distribution or use would be contrary to local law or regulation. Persons accessing this information are required to inform themselves about and observe such restrictions. Third-party trademarks appearing herein are the property of their respective owners. All others are the property of FMR LLC. Copyright 2026 FMR LLC. All rights reserved. 1040156.